It is 7:31, time once again for Community Forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning, Bob Hasegawa. Bob Hasegawa is a longtime labor and social justice activist. For 32 years, he was a member of the Teamsters Union, where he rose through the ranks to become the elected leader of the largest Teamsters trucking local workers union in the Pacific Northwest, and was also a leader in the National Teamsters Pro-Union Democracy Reform Movement. And he is currently serving his third term in the Washington State Legislature, representing District 11. Bob, thank you very much for coming and spending time with us this morning.
Thanks, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here. It's actually the fourth term I'm in now.
Oh, fourth. I'm sorry. Since 2005?
Yes.
Start out, last year you co-sponsored a bill, House Bill 3162, to create a State Bank of Washington?
Yes.
So talk about the need for Washington State Bank and how that whole concept came about.
Well, the whole concept started with a conversation about revenue reform, and we're trying to look at smart use of the taxpayers' money over the long term. And, you know, there is one model that's been out there. North Dakota, of all places, has their own publicly owned banking institution called the Bank of North Dakota. So working off of that model, it's been working quite well for North Dakota over the years. And the conversation turned, you know, because of the problems that we've been having with the banks since about 2007, 2008. We were looking at new innovative ways to think outside the box and how are we going to build some capital reserve for the state. You know, we have $2 billion every year that we spend in debt service just to pay on loans, bonds that we issue to keep capital construction moving in our state. Looking at the North Dakota model, their own bank finances most of their capital projects. And, you know, construction is one of the best ways to get money on the ground right now to keep the economy moving. So North Dakota does not have a debt service problem. The bank finances all of theirs. So that's like $2 billion right there every year that is not spent on interest to Wall Street banks. So our conversation turned to looking at a new way of maybe doing things. And right now, when the state collects all of our tax revenue, it's primarily held at what we call a concentration account at the Bank of America. So essentially, the Bank of America gets to use our taxpayers' dollars and reap the profits from it. The thinking is, why should we allow them to make money off of our money? Why don't we, as a state, make money off of our money? And then we still control that money in the process, and then we can redirect it back into our local economies for economic development purposes. So it's just a smart way to do business and a smart way to use taxpayers' money so that it's benefiting taxpayers here.
Kind of seems like almost a crime that it's going to Bank of America, actually, with all the problems that they've had. And
it's kind of a no-brainer deal, really. So what we're doing right now is we've had a couple of hearings on the bills during the last legislative session. So there was a House Bill 1320, and then there was a Senate companion bill. I can't remember the number of that now. 5623, I think it was. So we had good hearings on those bills last legislative session. As a result of those hearings, the House has formed a task force this interim to look at preparing a proposal for the 2012 legislature that hopefully will be able to pass through the legislative session, and hopefully the governor will sign. So that task force had its first meeting last Monday. If you're interested, it was taped by TVW, so it's on the TVW website. I'm very pleased with the caliber of the task force, the quality of the people and the experiences of the members of the task force, all of whom, they're either legislators or they are people who come from the banking industry. We've had our first meeting. It was basically an organizing meeting to lay the foundations and look at the type of work that we're going to be needing to do. It's a formidable task. You know, we're creating an institution, a humongous institution, and we have about 5 months to see where we can get with it. So we're moving forward. We'll be moving quickly on this stuff, but all of our hearings will be open. So if people want to come and observe and even comment on it, we'll have comment periods during each session, so we can get feedback from how the public is looking at what we're trying to do too. So we're moving forward with it. It's very exciting.
And people can follow that through your website?
Yes. You can go to ledge.wa.gov. I don't have the link with me right now, but it's a regular committee of the House of Representatives, so there's a way to find the website.
So how, in addition to just saving us or using that money that's going now currently going to Bank of America that they're taking their cut out of and having that cut come back to the citizens here in Washington State, how else would a state bank, help, let's say, small businesses?
This is one of the prime drivers of why we first started looking at this, because when credit tightened, if you talk to the banks, they'll say there's lots of money out there to be lent and that they are, in fact, lending it. But if you talk to any small business owner out there on the street, they'll say just the opposite. And in fact, there's been studies done. There's actually been conflicting studies, but primarily the ones that I've been relying on, they'll interview small business owners, and small business owners will say their number one issue is access to capital. So I've had small business owners and farmers, small farm owners, come to my office literally on the verge of tears saying they're going to lose their farm just because they've been cut off from access to credit by their banks, and nothing had changed within their credit rating or their credit history. It's just that the banks are saying they don't want to make the same mistakes again, which is understandable, but that's a real drag on our economy, because 75% of the jobs, new jobs that are created in our economy, are created by small businesses. And if they cannot get access to credit, which every small business owner has, or every business owner has credit needs, because your revenue and accounts receivables are always fluctuating, and if the receipts do not match your outlays, you need credit to weather through that until your receipts do come in. Well, if you don't have that access, you're done. One of the main things that our own state bank can do is, following the model of North Dakota, they partner with local commercial banks. The Bank of North Dakota does not compete with commercial banks. It actually partners with them. So it multiplies the available money that can be lent into the local economies and keeping small businesses and small farmers afloat. So that's a key piece for what we're trying to create, is that we do not want to compete against the banks. What we want to do is partner with them to make sure that capital continues to flow into our communities.
Okay. So, and when you say banks, you mean the big banks that are here in Washington, or let's say smaller community banks and our credit unions?
My concern is mostly for community banks, because they're the ones who know their communities that they work in, that they operate in. They know the needs and the credit histories of the people in the community that need the loans. Large banks obviously are also in that same marketplace, but they have sufficient resources if they had wanted to. So by partnering with those banks, whether they're community banks or big national banks, the end effect is that we'll be freeing up capital into the small businesses and small farmer communities so that they can survive. One of the interesting things about North Dakota is North Dakota has a lot of firsts in the country. They're the only state in the country that does have its own bank. But one of the things that North Dakota has is they call it the most decentralized banking system in the country. In other words, they have the most banks and bank branches per capita of any state in the country, which means that the big banks haven't monopolized the marketplace, that there's a lot of local community banks in North Dakota. Those are the types of banks that really understand the needs of local communities and what we can really support here in the country. Not surprisingly, because it does a great job in supporting local small businesses, whom I mentioned provide most of the jobs in an economy to begin with. North Dakota has another interesting first, which is that it's the only state in the country that had a budget surplus last year. So they had a budget surplus of $1.1 billion. A lot of people say that that's because of their oil and gas revenues. North Dakota is very rich in oil and gas, and to a certain extent that is true. That revenue does help North Dakota significantly. And another thing that North Dakota has had is no banking failures. You know, the state of Washington, I think we're up to 15 banks that have failed since the credit crisis began, and there's another 20 or so that are on the bubble. And the reason for that is that the Bank of North Dakota acts as sort of a mini Federal Reserve for these banks, and it provides liquidity for these local community banks. Banks, like any other business, have cash flow issues too. With all of these firsts that North Dakota does have, the one common factor amongst all of them is that they own their own bank. And if you look at any developing country around the world, they all have publicly owned banking institutions themselves. So you look at Brazil, China, India, Japan, they all have their own state-funded banks. The United States is one of the few countries that doesn't have its own public bank systems. A lot of people think that the Federal Reserve is a publicly owned facility. It's actually not. The Federal Reserve is owned by the banks. The Federal Reserve provides capital to banks, but it's not publicly owned. So their policies are governed, so to speak, by a combination of political will from the United States government, but also by what the banks want. So there's a distinct difference between that and a publicly owned institution. So that's what we're trying to create, is a little bit of independence from Wall Street for the state of Washington.
So have you spoken with representatives of some of the smaller community banks here in the state about your idea?
Banks are sort of across the board understandably skeptical about this concept because their main concern is competition. They don't want a state-owned institution which would have enormous leverage to compete directly against them, because a state institution wouldn't be paying taxes. It doesn't pay taxes to itself. That could give this institution a so-called unfair advantage. So that's understandable. So that the main protection that we're trying to create some comfort level amongst the community bankers is that we do not want to compete. You know, we want to follow the Bank of North Dakota model as closely as possible, which has proven to be a successful model. North Dakota was created in response to a credit crisis in North Dakota. Well, actually, it was across the country back then. They felt like their futures were out of their own control, that Wall Street and actually banks in Minneapolis and Minnesota were controlling North Dakotans' destiny. They wanted to be able to control their own destiny, and that was the impetus for creating their own bank.
And I have to imagine there was a lot of resistance to that back when it happened.
Yeah, there was a lot of resistance to it. The banks obviously didn't like it. They took it to the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court said if North Dakotans want to create a bank, they should be allowed to create it. So it took some time because of that pushback by the big credit institutions. It took a while for the Bank of North Dakota to get rolling, but it has played a significant role in the history of North Dakota. For instance, during the Great Depression, the bank acted as sort of a heat sink for the credit crunch that the country was going through. So for North Dakotans at the time, you know, the Dust Bowl era and whatnot, where there were no crops, and people were just literally losing their farms, the Bank of North Dakota, which held the mortgages on a lot of those properties, while the state of North Dakota actually declared a moratorium on foreclosures, the state bank foreclosed on them on paper, but actually let the people stay on the properties and work their farms until the economy turned around. They were able to raise the crops, and then the Bank of North Dakota sold those properties back to the original owners for the amount that the banks had in them. So it acted as that sort of heat sink to absorb the credit crunch issue until the farmers could get afloat again.
Looking at stats from, looks like late 2010 for North Dakota, they had at that time 23 homes in foreclosure as compared to over 11,000 here in the state of Washington.
What year are you looking at?
I think it was late November 2010.
Ah.
So
23
versus 11,000. That's dramatic. So would the state bank also be working with the credit unions locally? Because I know that I know of a lot of people who are moving their money into credit unions, out of big banks into credit unions, because mm-hmm. that just seems like a safer thing mm-hmm. at this point.
Well, the state bank wouldn't probably have any interaction with the credit unions at all. Following the North Dakota model, the state is a primary depositor within the bank. So it would be the state's tax revenues would be the primary deposits for the bank. Now, North Dakota does have a policy that the bank belongs to the people. So if the people want to keep their money at the bank, they should be entitled to, but they don't market it to the general public whatsoever. They just have a few hundred accounts, personal accounts, I think. The Bank of North Dakota has one branch. It's in Bismarck. So if you want to do your business with the Bank of North Dakota, you have to be willing to go to where their branch is. I actually visited their bank. It's a beautiful facility. It's been making money for the state. They were able to build a brand new building recently. It's a beautiful building. There's a picture of it on the website, I believe. But they do not market to the general public, so they don't have ATMs scattered around the state. They don't do credit cards necessarily for the general public, any of those that you would consider typical banking services for the retail public. Its primary purpose is to be a depository for the state's tax revenues and to use that money wisely back to keep their local economies going.
So how do you respond to people that say what we need is less government involvement and oversight? This bank, this state bank, is just going to be another large entity that's going to be controlling our money and sapping our resources away.
I don't necessarily buy into that whole concept of less government to begin with. I think you have to right-size government. So it's not just strictly about shrinking or eliminating. It's about doing what works best to achieve our common goal. And our common goal is we want jobs for everybody. We want a social infrastructure, including education and safety net services, that is adequate for the people. By creating our own state-owned banking institution, it's such smart government in the sense that we're using taxpayers' dollars for the best interests of the taxpayers and not to make profit for Wall Street. That's just one thing. The other thing that it does is it can consolidate a lot of government functions that we have right now that are separately administered. So the state actually does have a lot of lending programs going on right now. We've got Public Works Trust Fund that helps finance local infrastructure development, like building sewers and water systems, that sort of thing. We've got the Housing Trust Fund that puts money into developing affordable housing. You know, we have the Health Sciences Discovery Fund. We've got a lot of these little funds that are scattered all throughout the state departments. If we put them all under one umbrella, this consolidates government and makes for more efficiencies and better actual economies of scale for leveraging that money back into our local economies. One of the things that a bank can do that these lending funds cannot is that it can leverage. So what is a mystery to many people is this whole concept of fractional reserve lending. So while we have lending funds, they're just basically revolving lending funds. So you put a loan out, money comes back in, that refunds the fund so that it can make more loans. That's one way to do it. But if you've got $1 billion in a fund to lend out, that's $1 billion worth of a lending that you're capable of, plus the interest return. The miracle of banking, just by the word bank, is that you can leverage the money. So $1 billion in actual fund, you can leverage to actually $10 billion worth, or even greater, depending on your risk tolerance. But general banking principles are somewhere, I think they're lining up around 9 to 10 times leverage. $1 billion worth of money set aside for capital construction, for instance, translates to $10 billion worth of work in the community. So when they say states are not the federal government, the states can't print money, actually we can, on the books. That's how banking works. Every bank does that. So you can leverage that money that we appropriate for capital, budget, or for whatever, leverage that back into the community for economic development. And you can imagine the much greater effect that will have in making sure that the economy keeps going.
Yeah, I know Bank of America likes to advertise on their commercials that they're investing in local communities, but it seems if you actually look at the numbers, it's anything but that.
Yeah, I think that sort of bears that out. You just talk to anybody on the street, and that's where the real world is. And if they can't get a loan, you know, there is money being lent, but most of that money is being lent to larger businesses. And so, you know, dollar-wise, yeah, money is being lent, but when they're going to large blue chips or whatever, in the it's not really doing what we would like to see, which is to support local communities and small businesses and small farmers.
So what hurdles do you see ahead for this? What is your plan going from here on out? You said you just had a meeting here this last week.
Yes, our task force had its first meeting. The major hurdle is to keep this as a nonpartisan issue. I've been working really hard to make sure that this does not become bogged down in partisan politics. You know, North Dakota is a very conservative state. It's run, I think, both chambers of the legislature and the executive branch are all controlled by Republican Party. But you talk to anybody from North Dakota and they are enormously proud. They actually take pride in their public institutions, especially the Bank of North Dakota. So I'm trying to keep this as nonpartisan. That's probably the biggest hurdle, is to try and keep people focused on what's in the best interests of the state of Washington and not get bogged down in partisan politics. The other big hurdle we're going to have is just the time crunch. You know, trying to get a proposal prepared for the 2012 legislature, you know, to create a huge institution the size of a bank that can absorb, our state revenues are $32 billion in a biennium. So this is not a small feat. And so, you know, we'll probably have to move into this thing incrementally and making those strategic decisions about where we want to start off and how we want to move forward. Those are going to be difficult decisions as well.
How much of what the Bank of North Dakota has done can be easily transferred over to our state?
Easily? No. That's a relative term. Yes. Nothing in politics is easy. But that being said, you know, I think we could do anything that the Bank of North Dakota can do. You know, obviously, Washington State's economy is much different than the North Dakotan economy, which is primarily based on extractive resources and farming. Washington has a huge farming, agricultural, economic base. It's the largest industry in the state. But we don't have those types of extractive resources like North Dakota does. We do have a lot of other resources, though, that that North Dakota does not have. So I think that we can do anything that the Bank of North Dakota can do. We just need to make sure that whatever we do meets the needs of Washington State, you know, and we can't just, like, rubber stamp what Bank of North Dakota did and say that it will work here. We need to be strategic about how we're going to implement this thing.
And how have big banks responded to your proposal, like Bank of America?
They obviously were knee-jerk opposed to it at the beginning, but their primary concern is the competitive fact. As long as we can stay on track in this non-compete thing, they surprisingly have moved off of their absolute resistance to wanting to work with us to see if there's a proposal that we can put forward in 2012 legislature. So I'm very hopeful that we can get to a point where it won't meet that absolute brick wall resistance that would otherwise be there if we're developing a competitive institution.
Just over a minute left. So what message would you like to leave with listeners regarding this issue?
If you're interested in this, you can go to the website. But this is just one innovative concept in a larger revenue reform conversation I think the state needs to have. Our parents taught us how to build America. Back in the day, the philosophy was those who get the most out of the system morally need to put the most back into the system. So the top tax rate post-World War II was about 91%. Now we bought into this sort of trickle-down economics theory that we know doesn't work. Just look at the economy around us. You've got this whole divide between the haves and the have-nots that's growing, working classes disappearing. We need to go back to what works. We know what works. Our parents taught us how to build America, and that was with having adequate resources so that we can build something for our grandchildren, and we've gotten away from that. So this is part of that overall strategy on building resources for our grandchildren.
Well, with that, we are unfortunately out of time. I want to thank you very much for coming and spending time with us this morning.
Mike, it's been my pleasure. Thank you for this.
Just been talking with Washington State Representative Bob Hasegawa, talking about the Washington Investment Trust, and you can go to his the state website to get further information about this, which is at
ledge.wa.gov, and you should be able to find it from there.